You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who live, work, and minister in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today we get to talk to Pastor Steve McVeigh. He is the founder of a community called the Dirt Roads Network that seeks to resource, care for, and otherwise partner with rural churches and just really see, similar to our own podcast, what God is doing there and kind of champion that, come alongside it, strengthen it. And so I'm just excited to dive into this conversation. He's going to tell us a bit of his story, a bit of the story of the Dirt Roads Network, and then we're going to talk the rural church, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But first, I want to say, Pastor Steve, how are you, sir?
I am doing awesome, and how are you?
I'm doing good. It's springtime in Montana at the time of recording, so it's some days are snow and some days are 80 degrees, and you just never know what's happening.
I'll take the 80 degrees, please.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, Pastor Steve, we like to, you know, we know that rural place is a place of story, and so we like to start every podcast by just kind of highlighting our guest's own story. And so maybe give us the flyover, you know, maybe it was I got saved at a young age or I took off for Bible college somewhere, but what has your journey in ministry looked like up to this point? Kind of hit the major stops along the way and tell us how you got to what you're doing.
Absolutely. So I was raised in a real conservative, legalistic church in a big town, Lansing, Michigan. And that community, like if you throw in Michigan State and that whole area, I mean, it's close to a million people that live around where I live. And there's much to my journey. I was called to be a pastor when I was like 14, ran from that calling, and in my early 20s as a married man, went to Indiana Wesleyan and studied to be a pastor. My first pastorate was in Akron, Ohio, the time the 72nd largest community in the United States was Akron, Ohio. But in the summer of 2000, through a series of events, God called us to a little place in the middle of the Flint Hills of Kansas called Lamont. It is an unincorporated town. Less than 40 people live there. Less than 2,000 people live within 15 miles of there. It is rural, remote, USDA level 6 rural remote.
So you're saying maybe not in the top 100 most populated cities in America.
We have more cattle than we have people. You know the story.
I do.
And it was a little church that was being scheduled to be closed. And if I'm really transparent about it, part of the reason that I was going there is it was around 2 hours away from Nazarene Theological Seminary, where I was going to be finishing up some of my graduate work.
Sure.
But I'll do a quick little deep dive and then tell you.
Right, and then we'll tell the full story of Lamont as we go. Yep.
This lady in this church, the matriarch of this church, and she hates it when I say that she's a matriarch, but the matriarch of this church, this church had a storied history. A very popular guy had started this church back in the 1920s, but it had dwindled down to nothing. And when he passed away, the district superintendent from their denomination came to him and said, "We're going to close the church." And the matriarch got right up in his face, and she's a pretty calm little old lady, but she got right up in his face, and she said, "There are hundreds of people in this community that don't know Jesus and are in the surrounding countryside. Nobody else is trying to reach them. We've been faithful to our pastor." He was like 93 when he passed away, and he, you know, he had pastored, you know, there for 27 years after he retired. She goes, "We at least deserve a chance to reach them."
Wow.
And you know, it was that fuel, not a desire just to keep a church open because of family tradition and all the other things that we hear, why people want churches to stay open. It was a desire to reach lost people. They gave them a chance. This church somehow reached out to me. God worked all that out. And God did an incredible thing. This was a group of less than 30 people in a town of less than 40. And over the next, like the first 10 years of our ministry there, we were up to 300 in attendance. We eventually became a multi-site
Wow.
church, sort of a regional, more of a regional presence. And I had to learn. So, like you talk about rural ministry, I was a city slicker. I mean, like I knew conceptually the difference in between a bull, a steer, a cow. I didn't know what a heifer was, but I conceptually,
Sure.
but I couldn't look across a pasture and know what was
Well, and
going on.
it probably doesn't help that you didn't really do the gradual step in. I mean, you went from 76 most populous in the nation to unincorporated town of 40. Most people stop at like a town of 30,000, 10,000, 5,000. You know, you work your way down, Steve. Like you just dove. You're the kid in the video who cannonballed into the baptismal. You know what I'm saying? Like
Yes. And it felt like, I mean, all of a sudden I have to drive 40 miles one way to get to a Walmart. I mean, that's a different world. My life was changed in 2018 because a Dollar General was built like
Yes.
8 miles from our house. So we, and it wasn't one of those ones that has produce. You know what I'm talking about? Just a
Yeah, no,
straight
God bless the
general.
Dollar General, man.
Yeah, that's right. So I could at least get a gallon of milk now. Well, there was a Casey's General Store that I could go 7 miles to,
Sure,
but you
sure.
know, but I really approached it as a missionary, and had to learn so many things. I had to learn the culture. I had to learn simple things like just the way that like in a city, people are sort of viewed as assets or liabilities, as opposed to like loyal, disloyal, are you in, are you out, all of those. I
Yeah, there's
mean,
a lot of relational language that happens. Yeah.
absolutely different views of money, different views of time, different views of what church is supposed to be, all that kind of stuff. And so I went on a learning journey and learned all that. Then in 2017, we had developed this pattern of having discerning prayer retreats, like, Lord, what do you want us to do? We really lean heavily into the idea that we're supposed to discern what Jesus wants for his church rather than telling Jesus what he needs to do in his church. And at a discerning prayer retreat, the Lord just told us, you have these satellites. They need to be their own thing. There's no need. Like, I was being driven around on Sunday, like a country church
Sure.
pastor driven around on Sunday morning because people weren't buying into the video venue. So I'm preaching at one place, and then the campus pastor prays as I'm leaving and getting in a car and going to the next location 20 miles away. That just, the Lord just said no. And so we ended up planting three churches that year. We went from what was an average attendance of well over 400 to just 100 in the main at the main location.
Sure.
And somehow Exponential found out about that. And they invited me into a learning community. And as that was going on, I was traveling around the country. I was going to places like Brooklyn and Tampa and Houston and learning about church planting and all of that kind of stuff. While that was going on, at Wheaton College, they were starting something called Rural Matters Institute. And I was invited into a relationship with those folks as far as like how are they going to minister to rural people. But as I traveled around, it just became really obvious to me that people who really love Jesus, and I mean this, I want you to hear this, they really love Jesus, but they did not understand rural America at
Right.
all. They did not
Right.
understand the way we think. I mean, so literally, and I tell this story so vaguely that no one will ever be able to trace back exactly who I'm talking about, but I found myself in a room in Orlando where a young man had felt called. He was making a presentation about church planting. He had felt called to go back to his hometown of 10,000 and plant a church in North Carolina. And the advice that he had received was, you know, when the Apostle Paul received the Macedonian call, he did not go to the Macedonian countryside. He went to the principal city of
Yeah.
Macedonia. He went to Philippi. And if you'll go 45 miles to the east, out by the coast, there's a community of 110,000 over there. Are you sure that the Bible wouldn't instruct you to go there rather than where the Holy Spirit told you to go, where you already fit in because you know the culture? Oh my
Yeah, that's a
goodness.
tough one.
Go. Are you with me on that?
Yeah.
Something really boiled up within me. And I hope it was Jesus. It might have been like carnality or whatever, but something really burned within me when I heard that. And all of those things came together to start what is now Dirt Roads Network, where I desired to take all the things I learned at Xponential, all the things I've learned from people like Alan Hirsch and, Apest, and I mean, just all these things that I've studied over the years, ruralize it and just create a movement of people who see themselves as rural missionaries, because that's what we are. We are missionaries. Okay?
Absolutely.
We have to view this like a mission field. And so we're called, and what we began to do it in 2000, 2018, 2019, I think, is when we officially incorporated as a ministry. But we're called to raise up an army of rural missionaries who are committed to discerning rather than deciding, and are committed to being rivers rather than lakes. Rather
Oh,
than just
wow.
trying to collect people, trying to raise people up and send them. And so that is our compelling mission, and that's what we are about. And we're in several states now. We work with several different denominations. We've experienced a lot of growth. We do a lot more revitalization now than we do church planting, but we do all of those things. But all of that sort of emerged out of this little town of 40. I still live in that little town of 40. My office is in a town of 600, Madison, Kansas. So I live the rural life, and I relate well to rural congregations. But that's sort of how Dirt Roads Network started. I hope I didn't
Yeah, no, that's
up
really
that too
great.
much.
Well, let's do this. So I'm assuming, do you still, I do have a question. Do you still pastor in Lamont while you're running Dirt Roads Network?
I do not. I am on staff as a rural missionary. I preach there every once in a while, but God sent us a couple of Kara and Andrew Hurlburt, who currently pastor the church. They're from South Carolina, of all places,
There you
but
go.
they've come out to help us. They now pastor the church. They do a wonderful job with that. I'm on staff. I preach there 5 or 6 times a year, but
Nice.
I'm on the road most of the time.
Nice. Well, man, that's first of all, thank you for just sharing that journey in ministry. So here's what I think would be great. Number one, I find that stories are encouraging, and especially revitalization is such a prevalent topic in the rural church, as you know, because again, there's this idea of, well, wouldn't planting a church be great? And it's like, well, yeah, but what do you do? What do you do with all these churches, all these people, all these buildings, all this history that you can't just, it's almost borderline disrespectful at times just to come in and wipe it all out and say, good luck, everybody. And so you'd obviously in Lamont had the opportunity to take the revitalization route for this next phase. And then we'll start talking about kind of what the Dirt Road Network has kind of grown into. But when it comes to Lamont specifically, maybe talk us through what that looked like in those early days of how do you take a church that's on the edge of closing with this one, excited matriarch figure and then roll it into a 400 plus, then eventually planting multiple churches. And I would just love to hear that story again, not to say, wow, look at Steve and the work he did, but really to give encouragement. It's almost a defensive revitalization. Like what can happen when we put in that work and stay that course. So tell us a little bit more about Lamont.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'd like to do is just share some principles with you as we do
Yeah.
that. Because revitalization is not a group of people getting together and decide to do church better. It is a group of people who have a spiritual awakening. Okay. The
Oh, wow.
revitalization is spiritual. It is not organizational. It is spiritual. And the motivation for revitalization has to be kingdom motivated. So let's go back to this. Her name is Bonnie. Bonnie telling the district superintendent there are hundreds of people that don't know Jesus. The reality is that most of the churches that approach us, when we dive deep with them, when they talk about revitalization, what they really want is to recapture the glory of the past. Maybe it's because their family is associated with that church. That's where their kids were dedicated or baptized, or I got
Sure.
married there. Or there's a family connection, or maybe just like we want to say that there's a church in this community. Until it is about lost people and there's a repentance for being internally focused, revitalization just is never going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't care what level where the church is in terms of the community they're in, it begins with a spiritual awakening. The second thing is that if you've been to one small town, you've only been to one small town.
Yeah.
Every town has its own story, Every town has its own personality. Like out here, we're sort of on a 10-mile small town grid because the railroad was like every 10 miles there'd be a depot where they'd load up oil. There was an oil patch out here and they
Sure.
needed load up the oil. So every 10 miles north, south, east, west, there's a little community. Most of them now are gone or they're 200, 300, 400, whatever. But every one of them has a different personality. Things like even the way you keep like you drive through the different personalities or the different towns, there are seven of them that are just right in this cluster that we ministered to right at the beginning. The way people keep their lawns is different. The educational level is different, even
Sure.
within a small thing like a small place like Kansas. So there's no program. Instead, as a missionary, I have to look at my community. So once I've had this spiritual awakening and I've repented of the fact that it's all been about me and now I've got to reach my community, what is my community like? How can I reach my community? What does my community need? It's going to be different than I can't go read a book on rural ministry and just start
Yeah.
following the rules of that. So how do I do that? Well, here's an amazing thing. Jesus is the Lord of your church and
Yeah.
he is alive. I mean, Jesus really is alive,
Yeah,
right?
turns out. Yeah.
And he has a will for your church.
Yeah.
Like he put your church there for a reason, and just maybe the way to have spiritual life and vibrancy is to connect to the vine who planted that church originally and say, Jesus, what did you want to do with this church? Why did you put this church here? And then once he like you discover that, you discern that, then all of a sudden maybe you can develop a ministry action plan that isn't based on some human wisdom or some like some businessman that's been really successful at how to like start things, and so you like go to him and he's a guru and tells you how to redo your church. How about if you just listen to Jesus close enough and he asks you to do something crazy and you go do it,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
And so what we did is we started having discerning prayer retreats at Lamont. The Lord told us to do things. Like even me coming there was a response to them asking the Lord what we were supposed to do. And what the Lord told them is they needed to have a full-time pastor. Their budget at the time was 37,000.
Yeah.
And they had an interim pastor who was driving like 2 hours one way every weekend to
Dang.
preach, while
Sure.
they were going through this time before I came. And they decided that what they believed is that they needed to have a parsonage. Because like resale value out where we are, okay, property is what it is, but what pastor is going to buy a house in a town
Oh,
of
absolutely.
40?
Yeah.
So we need a parsonage. Immediately, and if you don't mind, I'll just take a few minutes and tell
Yeah.
this story because this is what rural congregations need to understand, that Jesus has a will and his will
Yeah.
is amazing, right? Immediately, two ideas came up. There was a lady who owned an old farmhouse around 2.5 miles outside of Lamont who
Sure.
said, if you will take this farmhouse, if you'll move it, you can have it.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, okay, we could move the house and move it to Lamont, move it to the church property there and have a parsonage. Another group said, we have a couple general contractors, plus, we're dealing with ranchers, right? We
Yeah,
can
they
do
know it. They know how to move stuff
it.
around. Yeah.
Yeah, and we know how to build stuff. And so there was a group that wanted to build the house. And so, do we build a house or do we move a house? Well, if it's my church, we politic that out and we find a win-win and a compromise. But if it's
Yeah.
Jesus's church, what do? We pray to Jesus.
Huh.
And so the story is that the head of our board, he lived on a dirt road 10 miles from the church, 10 miles south. Like I told you, we're on a 10-mile grid. He had decided that we needed to move a house. And the church had been going through this book called Experiencing God by Henry Blackaby.
Oh yeah.
It says, God is at work in the world and you
Yeah,
join God.
and
So
from what I understand, that book is great for kind of, trying to discern the will of the Lord and just help people understand the leading of God in these different situations. Like really cool.
yeah, it's a great book for
It's
rural
on my
folks.
list actually, so I have not read it
Yeah.
yet, but I'm excited.
It's a great. Then, like, if you want to go advanced with that, you could go Ruth Haley Barton, Pursuing God's Will Together. But I like starting with Experiencing God. So Bud told me the story. He's with Jesus now, but Bud told me the story. He's driving the 20 minutes up the 10-mile dirt road to board meeting where they were going to make the decision, are we going to build a house or are we going to move a house? And he was convinced that the frugal thing to do was move a house, right? Because we're rural and
Sure.
moving makes a lot more sense. So they get in a board meeting, and my secretary, who's just like right now, 30 feet from me through this wall over here. She was in this board meeting as well. And I asked her to retell the story a year ago and just was so encouraged by it. They get together and the pastor says, the interim pastor, I was still on the fringe here, like, is Steve gonna come or not? We still hadn't made that decision. And the pastor said, well, if we truly believe that Jesus is alive and that he has a will for this church, rather than us suggesting this, let's just pray in silence for a while and just listen to the Lord and see if the Lord doesn't tell us what we're supposed to do. And I've heard different versions of it. I know because I've sat in silence that 5 minutes feels like an hour.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah, there was a significant amount of silence, and there was a sense of God's tangible presence that came into the room. And the pastor, the interim pastor, his name was Rick. He said, "Is the Lord speaking to anybody?" And Bud, who had been really pushing to move the house, with tears running down his cheeks, and he was a tough man. You know,
Tough
he
guy,
wasn't
yeah,
someone,
exactly.
he did not get emotional often. He said, "You know, I sense the Lord is calling us to build a house." And the Lord confirmed that in that moment. Like as everyone in the room, yes, we need to build a house. So they went about building a house. And there had not been a new house built in Lamont for 45 years. And we built it ourselves. This is where I began to be a part of the process. And people were driving by. You know how it is. Like something
Yeah,
new is
looky
being
Lewin. Yeah,
built.
exactly.
And they would see us, and people would feel sorry for us, and the whole barn building mentality. They became a part of it. A number of men whose wives came to the church suddenly started getting involved. And what we did is, like, we would pray every morning before we'd start building. Like, every stud in the place has a scripture verse written on it. Like, they'd have the kids come in and write, like, on my steps underneath the carpet say, my steps are ordered of the Lord, you know,
Oh,
all this
sure.
stuff. It was a spiritual thing. And when we dedicated that house, we ended up building it debt free. I mean, because that's the other thing about rural, when you're in a farming community,
Yeah,
there's
you want to
more
be careful with
money
money.
there. But there's also more money there than you realize. Like, if the need is real and you're being frugal, the money shows up as you need it. When we dedicated that house at that service, we had 76 people that came to church that Sunday, and we never had less than 76 people. See, we thought that we were making a decision, do we move a house or build a house? God was building his church. He knew that the building of the house was going to develop opportunities for us to develop a witness in our community. And it was the first big step towards us accomplishing our mission. There were men who now suddenly are more involved with the church. There are people who were neighbors who've had mercy on us, who got to hear the vision. My goodness, you guys are really going to hire a full-time pastor, all that kind of stuff. When we make decisions, we leave out the fact that the God of the universe planned the Roman roads in a universal language so that Jesus could come at the right time. And that strategist works for you. Like you work for him, I guess would be the right way to say that. So when you think about revitalization, those concepts, I believe any church that will take the time to listen to what Jesus tells them to do and then take the bold steps, because it will take bold steps. And it's going to take these days non-traditional steps. Like, we're not going to reach rural America with traditional church ministry. If traditional church ministry was going to reach rural America would be
Yeah,
reached.
that would be the place.
Yeah, you know, it would be done already. So how do I, like, I don't want to be smooth. I don't want to be slick. I don't want to be relevant, all those buzzwords, but I do want to be Jesus-y. I want to be what Jesus wants me to be. So Jesus, help me to do something that you want me to do that is non-traditional to reach my community. Help me to be a missionary and see my community the way a missionary would see my community. So like revitalization, that's like we got up to 76, then we did all this stuff like children, invested heavily in children's ministry, invested heavily in youth ministry. I substitute taught. I mean, I just like, I don't, I'm sure it's like this up where you are, but most people have their hands in three or four pots, right?
Pretty classic.
So a pastor has to be that way too, right? I mean,
Yeah,
so
I
I
remember one
substitute.
day I was substitute teaching also as a small town youth pastor, and it was a class I hadn't like subbed for before, and I said, well, and it was elementary school, and I said, where do you guys know me from? And five hands went up, and they actually gave five different answers because of just the different ministries and community involvement. Like you get on the line, and they're like, "Well, we know you as the guy who does this," and I'm like, "That is one thing that I do." You know, it's just so I sympathize with you. It's very real.
Yeah, but it's a great opportunity, right? Because like, okay, so if you went to Africa, like if so one of the things I tell people to Rose Network, and this isn't like original with me, but you know, if two people come out of Bible college and one of them feels that they're called to a small village in Africa, we treat them like a spiritual hero. We raise money for them, we pray for them. They come back, they tell us a story about a giant snake and they have a machete and someone got saved. We think they're spiritual heroes. But if they come to Lamont, Kansas, we think that they're probably in single A
Yeah, not
baseball.
talented enough. Exactly,
Right.
somehow.
They've got to prove themselves. They've got to find their voice. And if they do pretty good, we'll move them up to a large, it's a career path, not a calling. Well, we believe it's a calling, right? So rural ministry is a calling, not a career path. So anyway, I can't remember exactly where I was going with that, but I firmly believe that if we will get on this idea that we're missionaries and pursue it, what we'll discover is that we work with people who do several different things, have several different revenue streams. And if I'm really going to be a part of the community,
Yeah, that's
I need
probably
the
your
stuff.
gig.
Absolutely. Because if I went to Africa and I found a job where I would interact with every school kid that's in the village I'm trying to reach
Yeah, they
five
would
days
call
a
you again a
week.
hero. We'd say, good job.
Yeah. We'd put it in our prayer letter. The Lord has not only given us a job to provide for our needs, but He's given us an open door to the schools. But like I've seen pastors that are bus drivers that have their heads hung down as they're driving the bus, thinking John Maxwell would never do this. Well, you know what I'm saying? No, you're doing your mission. Like this, how about this bus driving is actually your mission field, right? So we have to reframe some of that stuff.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. I really love your focus on the roots and the foundation because I think that you're right. I think sometimes we look for the cart before the horse and we say, well, what are the programs and what are the things and what are those kind of tried and true, principle-driven building blocks? And truthfully, even your emphasis on discerning prayer, on saying, hey, we're not going to politic and compromise. It's not always about just applying natural wisdom. It's about being prayerful and saying, God has a plan for this church. We need to lean into it. Who would have guessed that building a parsonage was the means by which God built his church? You know, and I think that story in different terms has been repeated in rural communities, and I'm sure you've witnessed that. Thank you all for tuning into Rural Advancement this week. This has been part one of a conversation with Steve McVeigh, who is the founder of Dirt Roads Network. We have definitely enjoyed just getting to know not only his story, but really the story of Lamont, Kansas, where he started to pastor in a rural setting. I love this because, number one, I've been encouraged and challenged by his story. But number two, even if you listen to the first half of this episode, you start to pick up these key principles for revitalization. Join us next week for part two of this conversation as we dive into the story of the Dirt Roads Network, what kind of resources it can offer, and how we as pastors can face the challenges of the rural church head on. As always, we hope you walk away from this podcast encouraged and inspired. We hope to always bring you voices that speak right to your situation. And we hope that you spread the word about this podcast, one conversation at a time, as we all try and take advantage of a great resource together. For this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Steve McVeigh, and we will see you for part two next week.